Welcome to Hungry Authors, the show for aspiring authors who will stop at nothing to accomplish their writing and publishing dreams.
We're your hosts, Liz and Ariel, and we're honored that you're here. Let's dive in.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Hungry Authors podcast. Today, we have something a little bit different for you. Our friend Kent Sanders, who has been on this podcast before in season one and who we've talked about several times, he is a big part of the Hungry Authors origin story, and he invited us to be on his new podcast, The Profitable Writer. So we recorded an excellent episode, and then he said, hey, if you want to use this for Hungry Authors, go ahead. So we are going to play for you the entire conversation that we had for The Profitable Writer on this podcast. And I hope you all enjoy. It's a really interesting kind of behind the scenes conversation about ghostwriting and how we operate our businesses as writers who get paid to do writing every single day. So I hope you enjoy this behind the scenes look at profitable writing.
Liz and Ariel, it's so good to have you back here on the podcast. The last time you were on, it was called the Daily Writer Podcast. And because I apparently have a habit of switching my podcast branding every few years, now it's the Profitable Writer Podcast. So whatever I'm doing on my end, I'm always thrilled to have both of you on the show. You kind of class up the joint a bit, which I appreciate.
Thanks.
So welcome. Glad to have you guys.
Thank you. We're super excited to be back.
So what we're talking about today is a little bit more of a broad topic, which I guess I would frame this as the author's or the writer's career. And a lot of times on the show, and you know, when you listen to other writing shows, they're talking about very specific things like client work or book marketing or outlining your book or very strategic or granular kinds of topics. And today I want to do the exact opposite. And I'd love for us just to have a conversation about what do our careers look like? How did we get started? What are some of the challenges that we've had? What do we want long-term for our writing careers? These are the kinds of things that I wish I would have been able to ask, or I wish that I would have thought to ask somebody when I first got started in all this journey a number of years ago. So because you both are wise and accomplished, I'm always curious and interested to learn from you both. And I'll give my responses to some of these questions as well. So
let's do it.
All right. Let's start off though with Hungry Authors. This is a community / brand / all the cool things that you guys have joined together to offer to the world. And it's really, really something cool. So if you could both tell us why you decided to come together to create Hungry Authors, what it is, how it benefits people, and all those things, maybe that would be a good place to start.
Sure. Well, a few years ago, I keep losing track of like when it was. I mean, over 2 years ago now.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I'm not the only one who does it. Okay. I feel better.
Right.
Now.
Yep.
Ariel and I were both leaving our traditional-ish jobs, or, you know, our 9-to-5s where we work for somebody else. And so we both went freelance around the same time. We can talk more about that in a little bit if you want. But basically, we got connected because of that. We were new to the freelance world. We were both kind of lonely navigating it, wondering, how do you get clients? How do you have work buddies if you don't work with anybody anymore, and just all mm-hmm. the things that come with freelancing. You know, we both sort of felt like we didn't really know what we were doing, and so we started a mastermind together that has included a couple other amazing women, and that's been great. And then somewhere along the way, during Voxer messages and mastermind meetings, we realized that we both were interested. Actually, I feel like we have to give you credit because you were one of the, maybe the first person who said, like, I mentioned something about writing a book for nonfiction writers about how to write a nonfiction book. And you're like, hey, you should talk to Ariel. She's like, said the same thing. You guys are basically trying to work on the same book, and we were already good buds, and we hadn't even talked to each other about that yet. And so, we started talking about what would it look like to write a book. The whole Hungry Authors brand, community, company all started with the book idea. So we wanted to write a book for first-time nonfiction writers about how to write your book. Anyway, since we spend a lot of time helping clients one-on-one do this, but a lot of people can't afford our one-on-one services, and we mm-hmm. still wanted to help people, and we felt like we'd had this really cool process that worked for everybody. Anyway, so we did the whole book thing, wrote the proposal, and then it just evolved into masterclasses and the podcast, which of course was also your idea. And yeah,
I don't remember that.
Told us early on, you're like, you should do a podcast. And we're both like, no, that's never happening.
And here we are.
Yep.
Yeah. Awesome. And so that's basically how it got started. And then now we have a book coming out in August, and the podcast is in its third season. And, you know, that's how it worked.
Ariel, anything that you want to add to that?
The only thing I would say too is we are now doing cohort courses, which is kind of fun. And we've got kind of a community aspect to Hungry Authors, which is also really cool to see people, you know, engaging with especially the book mapping process that we teach and experimenting with it and really developing their own books. And the feedback that we've gotten through those experiences has been incredible. It's always really fun for us to see pictures of people's book maps and to hear from them, you know, however many months down the road saying, I finished my book or I've got a book deal. That's been a lot of fun for us.
Now, I do know that you both decided to, because a lot of people ask me about traditional publishing versus self-publishing versus hybrid, yada, yada. It's like the ongoing conversation in the writing world. And a lot of people talk to both of you about it, I'm sure. I know that you both decided to go with, a publisher for your Hungry Authors book. I'm curious if you can share why you decided to go that direction instead of self-publishing.
Well, we had originally thought we would be self-publishing. A lot of editors and writers kind of in this space, when they write their How to Write a Book, which seems to be kind of a rite of passage for a lot of people in this industry. a lot of them self-publish, and I think that's just because there's so much competition, and it's, you know, we kind of know what the process looks like. And so a lot of us, I think, don't feel like you have to have a traditionally published book in order for it to sell well and, you know, all of that. So we originally thought we would do the same thing and self-publish our book or hybrid publish. And as we were working on mapping it out ourselves, I was like, you know, we write book proposals for a living. Mm-hmm. Why not just like try just for fun? And if it doesn't work out, we haven't lost anything. But you know what? Let's just shoot our shot and see what happens and write a book proposal. So we did. And we got an agent, Don Pape, who's been amazing to work with. And he pitched our book about this time last year. And then we were very honored to have Roman and Littlefield say they were interested in publishing it. So it just kind of worked out. And I will say, I'm grateful for the traditional publishing process in a lot of ways. I think there's, you know, pros and cons. That's a whole other conversation we could have. But I am grateful just to have gone through the experience myself. Obviously, yeah. You know, I used to work in traditional publishing, so I had a lot of knowledge about how it would go from that perspective. But walking through the steps as an author myself now, it's just been really interesting to be in, you know, kind of on the other side of the table and see how it works and test my own assumptions and expectations.
I think that was a really smart decision, actually, because I think there's a lot of value, because when you're working with clients, whether you're doing ghostwriting or you're doing book proposals or coaching or however we're helping people who want to write their books, I think if you can bring a wide variety of experience to that conversation, that's really helpful to them. Because you can say, well, I traditionally published, I worked with a hybrid publisher, I self-published. The more experiences that we all have, I think the more valuable that makes us to others, because we're speaking from a place of experience and not just from kind of what we read, you know, in somebody's newsletter or in some other book or something. So that I knew that you guys were going that direction. And I was like, that's a really smart strategic move. Because then I'm sure you'll both do self-publishing as well, in addition, maybe work with a hybrid or who knows. So I thought that was really cool.
Yeah. Thank you.
Let's talk for a second about the different things that you both are doing now. So obviously you're both involved in Hungry Authors, which is a book, community podcast, and that's like a whole thing in itself. Yeah, for anybody listening who has run their own podcast currently or in the past, or you've written a book, like those things in themselves are like a really solid part-time job, just each of those elements on their own. But that's only part of what both of you do. So, Ariella, let's maybe start with you. What are the things that you are currently doing right now in your writing career, in addition to Hungry Authors?
Yeah, I am ghostwriting currently 2 books. I also have usually, you know, a couple smaller projects going on at the same time as my ghostwriting. So I'll take on like a proposal edit or a developmental edit or something, which I have found I need to take on at the same time, even as a ghostwriting project, just so that I have money coming in sooner. Because usually for ghostwriting, and we could talk more about this, usually the benchmarks and milestones when you get paid are so spread apart.
Yes.
Even if it's a lot of money,
exactly,
they are so spread apart. And I just need money a little sooner than that usually.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
So I take on, you know, smaller projects along the way, some coaching clients too, just to keep, you know, keep things kind of coming in cash flow wise. And then besides that, I also have my own newsletter. So I'm pretty rigorous with my newsletter. I spend a lot of time on it each week. Mm-hmm. I send it out at least once a week, usually on Fridays. And that is a big chunk of my time each week as well. And that's something I do that, well, it wasn't paid. However, since I switched to Substack, some people have become paid subscribers, which has kind of blown my mind because I didn't really like start that with the intent of getting paid for it. But I will say, now that I have some people paying me to write my Substack newsletter, I feel a lot more motivated to do it and to do it even better than I have been doing it.
Well, your newsletter is really, really good. And I feel like it is, gosh, this sounds a little dramatic now that I'm going to say this out loud. But I feel like it's destined to, that really does sound overly dramatic. I watch too many movies, apparently. But I do feel like it's kind of destined to become something that is a real cornerstone for those of us who are doing this for a living. Because I sort of feel less pressure to keep up on things because I'm like, well, whatever things are happening sort of around this industry, Ariel probably knows about it before I do. And it's going to be in her newsletter and she's going to have some thoughts about it. So I have kind of come to rely on it a little bit as a news source, like legit. So, but it's obvious you put a lot of time and thought into it, and it's really, really good. And obviously we'll link to that in the show notes, but thank you for taking the time and effort to put together a really cool resource.
Well, that is a huge compliment. I'm honored.
Now, Liz, how about you? What kinds of other things are involved in your constellation of your writing career right now?
Yeah, I pretty much only do 2 things, and that is ghostwrite full manuscripts and book proposals. I have done a little bit of everything since I started freelancing, coaching, you know, random editing things, just trying to get a feel for what I like to do and am good at. Now I only say yes to book proposals and ghostwriting books. Now I will say the ghostwriting books bucket does sometimes come in varieties of conditions of the book. Sometimes,
yes,
you know, I do, I work a lot with agencies. I really like working with agencies. So I'm a part of a number of ghostwriting agencies mm-hmm. who feed me a lot of clients. And most of the time those clients are square one. They've got an idea, maybe even a baby idea. And we're starting with either, you know, starting with writing the manuscript if they just want to dive into it, or like book proposal to manuscript. So I do start at the beginning, no words on the page a lot. But I also have, I don't know, maybe like 25% of those ghostwriting clients, there is a manuscript that, and often these kinds of people either come to me themselves or they come to me through their agent or their publishing house, and they've turned in a manuscript and it's mm-hmm. not where they want it to be. Or they've got half of a manuscript and they're having trouble finishing it. And I also work with those clients too, where we're not starting from square one, but I still come in as, you know, a highly involved collaborator and, or just mm-hmm. full ghostwriter to take over the thing and, either finish it or seriously rework it. But that all kind of fits into the like writing the manuscript bucket. Yeah. And those are pretty much, that's pretty much it. I don't know if Ariel or if you're, if Ariel said this or if your audience knows, but we exclusively do nonfiction, and my specialty is prescriptive nonfiction for thought leaders, entrepreneurs, and industry experts. And I have done a couple of memoirs, although even my memoirs tend to fall into the entrepreneurial kind of people. And so that's primarily who I work with, and I write their book proposals and their books. And these days that's all I do. So, yeah.
And let me ask you, let me take a little 60-second little side jaunt. And this is the part of the podcast where I'm actually asking both of you for your advice about something. So I have actually, this might surprise some people because I've been doing ghostwriting a while, I've actually never been hired to write a full book proposal, just a proposal for a traditional publisher or for an agent. Most of the stuff that I have done has either been for self-published clients, in which case you don't really write a full proposal like you would for an agent because they're not shopping it around. But I always include those elements in a book pitch or something kind of like it. And in the cases where I've worked with traditional publishers for a variety of different reasons, they've never asked me to produce like a full book pitch or book proposal document. Sometimes because the agent has already kind of prepared something and already sold the book or whatever. So anyway, how do you guys think about when you are hired to write a proposal for something, and then when they also want you to do the book, how do you think about pricing for that? Because when you're putting together a really good proposal, by definition, you're already doing a chunk of the work of writing the book. So how do you both think about that? Do you kind of look at it as, well, if you do the proposal and then the book, you take a certain amount off of your typical ghostwriting fee for that project? Or I'm just curious how you both think about that, or if you encountered that situation where you've had to think about the pricing for a proposal plus book versus just a book or just a proposal.
Yeah, that's a great question. And of course, like, there's no right answer.
Totally.
But I look at book proposals as a trial run. I love it when I get a client who comes to me. We seem to have the chemistry that could result in a great long-term partnership that could go from proposal all the way through the book. Like, that's my ideal client. I like the long-term projects, but you don't really know that. And so I occasionally, through agencies, I will say most, or maybe my only actually, contract that includes everything, like proposal and book all in one, has been through agencies. And that's just like whatever your proposal price is. You know,
it's more of a set thing when you go through an agency. It's just like, here's the price for proposal versus book or whatever.
Right. And I still have a lot of say over how much I charge. And like, if someone wants to enter into that big of a contract, I probably would, you know, like if I normally charge $10,000 for a book proposal and my ghosting prices start at $40,000 and someone wants me to do them both, maybe I would do both for $45,000 and like give them a little bit of a discount for that.
Yeah.
One huge contract instead of.
That's kind of what I was thinking too.
Right. But I actually, given my choice, if someone came to me and I was drawing up the contract outside of, you know, an agency or anyone else representing either of us, I actually prefer to do them separate because number one, you do not know that they are going to get a book deal. And so you don't know.
That's true.
That's going to work out. And also, you don't know that you're going to want to write the book. Even like, you know, book proposal process is a great trial run. It gives you a good feel for who that person is, how much they have to say, how you work together. And, you know, there's been a number of times where I actually really ended up loving that client. But after writing their proposal, I did not particularly want to write the book because it just wasn't, you know, going to work for me. Or the proposal writing process, it's also quite long. And so maybe in a couple months, your circumstances have changed and you don't want to. Anyway, so I sort of look at the proposal process and then the selling of the thing by the agent as like a trial run or you know, an out if either of us wants it, and then sign a different contract for the book that I would probably still give them a little bit of a discount since they already paid so much. And a lot of that ideation and planning and is kind of all done, you know, which is why I like those kinds of clients a lot, because writing the book is super, well, not super easy. It's never super easy to write a book, but it's much easier if you've already done the proposal and you know just about everything that there is to know. But I mean, that's how I do it. What about you, Ariel?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly how I've done it. So I can think of two projects that have been like that for me that have been outside of agencies that like I've contracted on my own that wasn't through an agency, where I wrote the proposal and it was exactly like you said. We wrote the proposal together as kind of a, we're going to commit to this. And I did charge my full price for the proposal. And then for the rest of the manuscript, it was okay, you know, here's what I would charge for kind of the rest of the manuscript, excluding the sample materials, which were already written as part of the proposal, and then a little bit of a discount on top of that.
That totally makes sense. Okay. So it sounds like that I'm approaching it pretty much the right way. So, okay. I like that. I appreciate the advice.
Yeah.
Really all that this podcast is me just having smart people on the show. And I just get free coaching, basically. That's what it is.
That's not really. Our podcast is like that too.
Not really, but there is an element of that where it's like, you know, if you just kind of want to call somebody on the phone and have a conversation, that's one thing. But then if you invite somebody onto your show and then you let other people listen to it, it's kind of it's an easy way to get to talk to really cool people, which is one of the big reasons why I've always done podcasting. So maybe I'll throw my two cents in here, because we're going to actually share this episode on my podcast as well as the Hungry Authors podcast. So with the question of what kinds of things are you doing right now, I'll throw my hat into the ring here. So my main thing is ghostwriting. Last year, I actually got into a little bit of, I would call it project management for children's books, which was a really surprising thing that I did not anticipate. Probably I will not offer the service again. It's not even something that I really offered, but just through a series of kind of unique circumstances, three people from three different parts of my world came to me asking if I could help them with kids' books. And I had never done that before. And I want to write kids' books at some point as part of just my author career. And so I said, yes. What I found it to be was actually pretty complicated, because you're dealing with the illustrators, the authors. Then if you have books that are like different sizes, and then you have Ingram and KDP and Drafted Digital, they all have different requirements for things. It's actually turned out to be fairly complicated to do that, but I really enjoyed the process. So I think, like both of you, sometimes I just take on things that sound interesting and that I want to learn how to do, and you can do them for a client. So in addition to full ghostwriting books and doing some little side gigs like that, then of course I also run this podcast, and I run my Profitable Writer membership community, which is kind of the other main thing that I do. So I like doing a range of things like both of you. I do want to throw the question out there. So there have been times over the last, let's say, 10 years, once I kind of got the bug to want to start my own business, I still taught at the college where I worked. I still taught for a number of years after that, but I had thought at different times about, instead of just doing my own business, about working for somebody else, whether like some kind of full-time educational position or writing position or editing or whatever else. How did both of you think about that? Like, we hear a lot of pluses about kind of the freelance life or the self-employed life or the entrepreneur life. And yeah, there are definitely some pluses to that, but sometimes there are opportunities where they come along and you think, well, maybe instead of just kind of doing stuff on my own, I could work for somebody else full-time. I've got a number of friends who do those exact kinds of things. How do both of you think about that? And maybe when should people consider taking a full-time position that's in their wheelhouse versus just freelancing or being self-employed?
I'll share for myself. I mean, like you said, freelancing has a ton of benefits to it. I think one of the things I love most is the flexible schedule. That is by far for me, you know, especially now that we have foster kids in the house, it is just super convenient that if I need to, you know, leave in the middle of the day for taking one to a doctor's appointment or whatever, you know, I could just do that and I don't have to check with anyone and I could just go. I think the downside, at least for me, is again, you know, kind of the unpredictability of your income. That's a big one, especially if, you know, especially if you've got people relying on you.
Yeah.
That's definitely part of it. You know, the unpredictability of your income, and also just the fact that you don't have any clear boundaries around your work, right? Like having a full-time job provides some really nice, clear lines about this is what you're responsible for, and everything else is stuff you are not responsible for.
Yes. Great
and
point.
When you are freelancing, you know, I get pitched all the time things like, well, this is a little bit different from what you normally do, but would you consider doing X?
Yes.
Or like, I just had someone reach out to me on LinkedIn and be like, would you consider writing or, you know, editing a screenplay? And I'm like, I have no idea. I don't know. That's not, you know, and I'm probably going to say no to that for a number of reasons. But like, those are the kinds of things that come up when you're freelancing that like you have to constantly not just be thinking about, you know, what is the work that I want to be doing, but what else might I be willing to do? Like there's all of this possibility that is exciting sometimes, but also means that it can be really easy for your vision for your business to get blurry. And your, you know, then there's just the practicality of like, well, I need to have income. So maybe if I'm not getting, you know, if I'm not getting the work I really, really want right now, maybe I would say yes to some things that I don't really want. And that doesn't always feel good. So I think that's the place that freelancers can often find themselves in is, you know, compromising their vision for what they really, really want just because of the practicalities of life. And so, you know, if you find that happening or if you find yourself, you know, kind of craving the like really clear boundaries of like, you need to worry about whatever's in this box and everything outside of that box are things you no longer have to worry about. That can be really appealing. And for myself, you know, I came from, you know, I worked at a traditional publisher for almost a decade, over a decade, if you include my internships and stuff before that. And there, you know, that was really nice in some ways. I had a team. I was told what to do sometimes, which wasn't always great, but also provided me a lot of clarity. I could turn off my computer at the end of the night and be like, I'm done now. I've done what I needed to do today, and I'm still going to get a paycheck in 2 weeks. And that's all I'm responsible for. And I could just kind of turn off my brain to that when that day was over. With freelancing, there's just all of, you know, especially running your own business, you have to be responsible for everything. You know, it's tax season now. So I'm dealing with my bookkeeper and my accountant, and they're asking me for forms that I'm like, I don't even know what that is. And we have to file a report. And I'm like, I don't know how to fill out this report. And there's just those kinds of things that you don't have to worry about when you are a W-2 employee. Yep. So there's definitely pros and cons.
That's a really hard thing that I think a lot of people don't talk about. I certainly wasn't aware of the challenge of that when I went full time in my own business. I mean, I knew I was going to be my own boss, obviously, but I wasn't prepared for kind of the reality that there's no clear answers to anything. Because when you're your own boss, you know, if something isn't the way that you want it or the way that you like it, you only have one person to blame, really. And you can have coaches, you can have mentors, you can listen to podcasts and read books, but there's really no definitive person that can give you 100% clear answer about anything. Especially about what kinds of work you should do or not do. Should you go on this trip? Should you go to this conference? Should you take on this client? Everything is kind of an educated guess. I think the longer that we do this, hopefully the more educated those guesses are. But that is the nice thing about working for somebody else is you have definitive, clear answers about things. So, and that's an element that I do miss, I'll be honest. My life as a college professor was pretty regimented. It was very clear. It was very laid out. I never had to guess where I needed to be and what I needed to do. It was really, really clear. And that at times has been a struggle shifting into a self-employed life. So Liz, I'm curious your perspective on all this.
Yeah, I agree with everything Ariel said, and that by far the best or the biggest benefit for me is the flexibility. That part has been great, feeling like, yeah, I can take a day off if I'm sick or I need, or my kids are sick, or, you know, I just kind of want to. And yeah, like to some degree, quote, being your own boss, although people, I don't know, I think people oversell that part of freelancing. It's like, well, you're still accountable to a lot of people. So
yeah, really, you just have a lot more bosses.
Right. It's like no one's telling you have to be somewhere at 9 o'clock, but there are still deadlines and all kinds of other things,
right,
people you're accountable to. And, you know, yeah, I think when I went freelance a couple years ago, I did not come from a publishing house or anything. I worked for a traditionally published author who I was an assistant to at the beginning and helped him build his writing agency and then managed it. And that was an amazing experience. And I got a lot of I learned so much there. And actually, that's one of the people, like, because ghostwriting or having a writing career doesn't have a nice clear path the way that maybe going to medical school is, like, one of the ways I tell people is
that's so
possible.
True.
Like, one of the best things you can do is just go work for a writer in any capacity, be their personal assistant, make their appointments. Like, that's, I literally started as his personal assistant, making appointments, scheduling doctor's appointments, scheduling grocery deliveries, things like that. And then, you know, that just, whatever. It's like Neil Gaiman has some amazing TED talk about, or maybe it was a commencement speech. Anyway, rather, it's just like, try and take tiny steps closer to where you want to be. It doesn't even have to be like doing the thing you want. Just like, anyway, that was my in, was getting, becoming close to this writer. And Ryan Holiday did something serious or similar with Robert Greene. You know, he was just his research assistant from the beginning. So anyway, just go find a writer to work for and then you'll get some experience. Anyway, all that, back to your question. I think I romanticized what it would be like to be freelance, you know, like I'm whatever, building my reputation. I have, I can take on as many projects as I want. I can make so much more money, no cap to my income, you know, freedom, da, da, da. And all of that is to some degree true, but like Earl said, it's unpredictable. You sign a really big contract and it's exciting. And then the client drags their feet and that milestone that you thought was going to be every 3 months is now every 6 months, and you have to supplement that income somehow. So you have to go find something else. And then, you know, somebody turns around edits, like they drag their feet for 6 months, but they turn them around and now they've only given you 1 week to turn them back around because there's a deadline. And do you push back on that? Or do you just spend all the night doing it? You know, it's just, it is
the realities of what it is.
Yeah. And it just requires, I don't know, a whole new set of skills, both time management and stress regulation and boundary setting that you have to navigate. And there's, of course, the whole lack of community and team part that, like, you, it's just been so important to me to find people to support me and talk to about this kind of stuff. And, like, you know, I know Ariel is too, like, I am totally open to going back to full-time work at some point. And actually, I think freelancing and the experience that you gain could feed really nicely into a full-time position somewhere else. And then, you know, careers are long and there's no like straight path there. But I think, there's pros and cons and you just have to decide like what problems you want to have at the time. And freelancing is great, but I do think, especially in the copy that people write when they're trying to kind of sell you on something, it's romanticized and it's not it's not always the freedom and unlimited income that it can kind of be pitched as. It takes some really hard personal work to get to a point where you can deal with it, because the unpredictability is nerve-wracking, and sometimes a full-time job sounds really nice. And yeah, again, like Ariel, I'm not opposed to that. I think that would be cool.
I think that's really wise what you said. Thank you both for your perspective on that. That's really, really helpful. And I think that's going to be really helpful for our listeners as well. And your listeners, because this is going to be on your show. You said something really, really interesting, Liz, that basically you're choosing your problems. And that to me is a really important question, is what problems are you willing to put up with? When you're an employee, the problems are you have a cap on your income. Somebody else is determining what you work on and what you don't work on. They can fire you at any time. So, you know, those are generally the problems that any employee anywhere has to deal with when your income is reliant on one single employer. As a self-employed person or as a freelancer, your problems are, well, you know, especially Ariel, you mentioned you're responsible for everything. You're the marketing person. You're the PR person. You're the accounting person. You're sending the invoices. You're following up with people. You're doing all the work, unless you hire some of those elements out. So yeah, there are pros and cons to it. And for me, I ultimately decided that partly because of the stage of my life, because I have one kid, he's 19. You know, my work life looks different than it did 10 years ago when he was, you know, in middle school, and where I felt like he required more of my attention. For my life now, the problems I'm willing to put up with more are, how do I deal with the loneliness of being an entrepreneur and of being a solo business owner? Can I learn to love the marketing aspect and the client acquisition part better? Can I grow in my skills where I don't lack? And can I go out on the limb and hire the accountant? And I hired an accountant a couple of years ago, which was one of the best things I ever did, honestly. And I've grown a lot from those things, but it's so true. You're swapping one set of problems for another set of problems. So everybody kind of has to figure out what that is for their particular part of their journey. So I'm curious if you both can talk about, and you've, both of you have hinted at this, but I want to ask the question more explicitly. When you look down the road at, let's say 10 years, five or 10 years down the road, which is not as far off as maybe it seems to be, what are your goals and what kinds of things do you want to ultimately be part of your writing business? Here's what I mean by that, really. All of us have the opportunity to have a different constellation of things in our business and where our income comes from, whether it's passive income streams, recurring income streams like memberships, or doing direct client work, or book sales and royalties, or other kind, you know, speaking. There's a million courses. There's a million things to do. What do each of you want for your long-term writing career? And as you look at it now, from your perspective right now in your life, what do you envision those pieces might be, maybe 5 or 8 or 10 years down the road? And Errol, maybe let's start with you.
In my ideal world.
In your ideal world, perfect world.
I think in 10 years, I am mostly working on my own writing. I am writing a book, one book at one time. And I'm writing my newsletter. And ideally that newsletter has grown, and now I'm, you know, maybe I'm reaching 10,000 people every week. That's not even that many, but that would be incredible. And yeah, and that's pretty much it. Like that would be my ideal, is if I could spend most of my time reading amazing things and putting my thoughts together about the writing life for other people to learn from, that would be, I think, fantastic. And, you know, continuing to do some teaching or some speaking at conferences a little bit here and there. But especially as a parent now, I really want to be more present at home. That's my ultimate goal. I don't know that that will happen. In fact, I think that probably won't happen exactly like that. If it does, amazing, but I don't think it will exactly like that. And then I think, you know, well, I love doing what I do now too. I love helping people, and I know that I will always be helping writers in some capacity. Again, in my ideal world, I think that's very limited, but it will always be there. So in my less ideal version of reality, then, you know, continuing to do developmental edits and coaching or however that looks, I'm also very happy with that version of life too.
I love
don't know
that.
If that helps.
Yeah. And ultimately, I mean, isn't this really what it's all about? Ultimately, is you want to just be doing the things that give you joy.
Yeah.
Whatever those things consist of. And nobody else can really determine that for us. I think it is difficult sometimes because all of us know a lot of the same people, and we know a lot of people in this, even though it is kind of a small, it's a small world that seems big to us. But, you know, sometimes when I ask people like, hey, did you see the latest book by so-and-so? They'll be like, I have no idea who you're talking about. You know, it's like a celebrity to you in kind of our little bubble, whatever that industry or niche is. It's not always a celebrity like to the larger people who aren't into that thing. But anyway, it can be really easy to be jealous of other people or to want their careers because what they have, looking at it from the outside, seems like that would be so awesome. But all of us are unique and we have to do what brings us joy. For me, for example, I know that I don't ever envision that speaking is going to be a big part of what I do. I don't really like to travel. I perceive travel as just a ginormous hassle and interruption to my life. I know that's a kind of a negative take on it, but that's just what it feels like in my life right now. It's just a giant interruption that I don't enjoy for the most part. Maybe a few trips a year is fine, but nothing super major. So I don't envision that being a big part of my future platform. But other people are like, oh, you got to go out and do all this speaking and you got to do all this travel and stuff. But you have to do what brings you joy and fulfillment. Liz, what about you? Where do you envision your long-term writing career going? What kinds of things do you want to be a part of that?
Yeah, great question. Well, like Ariel, I think usually when I do this exercise, I more envision the life I want to have or the values that I want to uphold. I think I haven't been doing this a tremendous amount of time, but I think I've been doing it long enough to know that whatever I say now about what I hope is true in 5 to 10 years will probably be different next. Like if you asked me even, you know, a year from now, like years ago, I couldn't ever imagine leaving the agency that I had helped start. And then even just months ago, I don't think I would have ever told you that, yeah, I would definitely be open to full-time work again. It just,
things,
you know,
change, don't they?
Yeah, exactly. But that being said, here are some things that I really am pretty sure about. I would love to, be working on one book at a time. As a ghostwriter, you almost never get the luxury of having one project at a time. It's just, unless you can charge, you know, like J.R. Mulringer type prices, you know, like you almost always have to have a lot of things going. And that's the guy who wrote, you know, Prince Harry's book, for those non-dorks out there who don't know those.
You know what's interesting about
that?
Know
who a famous ghostwriter is? Yeah.
Can I make a little observation about that?
Sure.
I'd actually love to have him on this podcast at some point. I can't figure out how to get in touch with him. Yeah. Probably through Twitter or something.
Makes
but anyway,
that hard on purpose.
Yeah. I heard somewhere that, or I read somewhere that he got a 7-figure deal for writing Prince Harry's memoir. Of course, that means $1 million. Maybe more than that. What's interesting though, is that like, when you look at the numbers of that, like to the vast majority of those of us who do ghostwriting, we look at that and go, oh my gosh, that, like, how incredible is that? You're working with this, like, one of the world's most famous people. You're getting paid $1 million to ghostwrite a book. But then I started thinking, he probably spent, what, 3 years on this book? I mean, it's a really big book.
Right.
It's very detailed. Now, obviously, you're not working 40 hours a week, probably 7 days a week, that kind of thing, 5 days a week. Even though, if you divide that by 3 years, that's, you know, $333,000 a year. But once you take taxes and stuff out of that, like, it's not really that much money.
Right.
You know, like,
yeah, no, exactly.
People
yeah.
think of like the high level ghostwriters, and we sort of imagine that they're these like ultra rich, wealthy people. But then when you look at what's required to work on those types of books and how all encompassing it probably is, it's not really like vast sums of money, even at that level.
No. Yeah. I mean, one of the very first contracts I signed after I had my daughter, I quit the agency that I worked at right when I had my daughter and use that as an excuse to, like, you know, transition into freelancing. So I took about 3 months off and then started trying to find my own work. And one of the first contracts I was able to sign was to write a memoir for this amazing woman. And I'll be like open about numbers because I find that really helpful for people. That contract for the entire memoir, so up to 70,000 words, was 35. She was going to pay. The contract was over $35,000 for me to write the book. Now, that was at the time the biggest contract I had ever signed. And I thought, oh my gosh, someone's paying me 35. There's a time when I made $35,000 in a year and I just signed a contract to write a book. And I was like, I have got it made in my first month of freelancing. I signed this. Like, I just thought, you know, this, I have made it. Like, look, it wasn't even all that hard. Month one, and I'm already doing it. That book, I am still writing that book. Now, this is an exception. Most of them don't take this long.
Right.
She doesn't have a traditional deadline. She doesn't have a traditional, we're just writing it together. She hopes to eventually publish it, but she doesn't have a agent or an editor like hounding us because she's got a traditional deadline. So, you know, we had, the contract was from 9 to 12 months. 2 years later, over 2 years, well, just about 2 years
still
now,
rolling.
Still going. $35,000.
I've had a couple of those, yeah.
I found, I mean, spread out over 2 years, I found out real quick, oh, I'm going to need, this is not going to last me. I'm going to have to take on some more work. Anyway, yeah. To your point, like, yes. So ideally, I would love to be writing my own books. I think most writers aspire to that. So I would love to write a book, my own books, but just having the luxury of working on one at a time would be amazing.
Yeah.
I don't know what that looks like. I also, really do think that I love traditional publishing. Most of what I do is working with traditional publishers. Ariel's and my book is traditionally published. But it's become much more important to me lately to just help people write the book that they want to write. And you know, obviously there's certain benchmarks you want to hit that makes sure the book is like, quote, good, or that it's delivering on its promise and well written and structured well and blah blah blah. There are standards for that. But in general, I don't know if it is in freelance work or full-time work or whatever, but I do want to continue to help writers write the books that they want to write, that they're proud of, say the things that they want to say. And
yeah.
And then I have really small kids. I have a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old. And I think I am still constantly trying to work myself like out of a hole, so that I can be more present with them, keep them home. They're in full-time daycare, but you know, keep them home if I just happen to want to that day. Or and technically I can do that, but I still am not in a place where I can do that and not feel like I'm falling behind, you know.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I just have too much to do. And so I think my ideal life and contribution to the world and the publishing community would be continuing to work on books. I think I will always write in some capacity, but have that slow down a little bit. And just continue to like have the kind of work that allows me to be more present, have those boundaries that Ariel talked about that I have not been good at implementing. And I don't know if I need to get better at that, at implementing those on my own, or if perhaps I will eventually seek that in a full-time job. But I need more of that. And to be frank, like, I want to continue to increase my income. It's important to me to make good money and to provide, to have lots of options and provide lots of cool opportunities for my kids and my family. I'm willing to compromise on some things, but I will, I do hope to continue to make a lot of money, frankly. So, yeah.
I like making money. I think money's good. I like being profitable.
Yeah, that's the name of the game, right? I don't need to be J.R. Moringer and charge people $1 million, but money provides opportunity and options, and I really value, that's a value in my life. And so that comes from money, you know?
I love that challenge, because the more that we improve our skills, the more value we bring to clients and to our readers. And I think we should always be in a place where we're always thinking about, okay, am I charging what I'm worth? A lot of writers don't. they really undervalue their skills and they undervalue what they bring to the table. And man, if you're a person who works with clients and you make their life easier and you deliver a great product, that has a price and that has a lot of value. And that can really build their business or tell their story or whatever. So yeah, love the insights that both of you shared on this. This is fantastic. Well, thank you both so much. This has been a really, really fun conversation. I've learned a few things, which is always a bonus, what I can learn from my guests. And I hope this conversation is helpful to Profitable Writer listeners, as well as Hungry Author listeners. I know they'll be checking out this episode as well. So thank you both so much. Looking forward to your book release later this year. That's going to be a big hit, I'm sure. And we'll wrap it up there. Thanks again.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. If you're a hungry author and you want to learn more about our community and courses, head over to hungryauthors.com. Remember, you have a story and a message worth sharing, and if you've got the hunger, you can make it happen.